I always start the meeting with the set aside prayer. God, help me set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can experience new truth, your truth every day, every moment. God, help me carry your message tonight. Amen. Okay, we have a lot of people here tonight, and we have some important stuff to cover. We are actually beginning step 3 in the big book, and we covered, we're on page 60 to 63, for those who don't know the book. If you're new, I'll try to put it in perspective. We read at every meeting, page 60, and we read these three pertinent ideas, if you can turn to page 60. And we chant now. Everybody likes to chant. God couldn't would if he were sought, and they chant. So we're not going to chant. I'm just going to. These three things you have to understand if you're going to want to recover from your alcoholism. You have to understand and believe you're an alcoholic. And most people, when they come in, they have a vague idea why they're an alcoholic. They know they have a problem with alcohol and their lives are a mess. Anybody have that when you come in here? But what makes you an alcoholic is that you have an allergy of the body, so when you take one drink, you can't control how much you drink. Anybody have that? Yes. Just imagine if we got a few kegs in here tonight and we started drinking, we'd be fighting over the last thing and fighting out in the hall and everybody yelling at everybody. All right, we're not going to do that. All right, it's AA, we're not going to buy a keg. So we all have an allergy to alcohol. Can that be ever treated? No. Can you ever safely take one drink?
No.
So everybody in here is intelligent. Is there anybody here who's not intelligent? All right, we're all intelligent. So if you can't control how much you drink, an intelligent person would say, I'm not going to take the first drink. Doesn't that make sense? Mm-hmm. Now, why can an alcoholic, if you're a real alcoholic, not keep from taking the first drink? And remember, you're sober when you take the first drink. Another thing people don't understand, alcoholism does not occur after you drink. Bad things happen, but that's the effect of alcohol. Alcoholism occurs when you're sober. So why can't an intelligent person say, no, I'm not going to drink today and follow through on that? Because we don't have the power to do that. We have no power of my own to keep from taking the first drink. Now some people say, well, what does that mean? It means I have no power not to take the first drink, ever. Now, why don't I have willpower and can say no? Why can't I say no to the first drink? Because right before, when my mind says I need a drink, right before I drink, I can't see anything wrong with it. My mind will only think about what it's going to do for me, not to me. Did anybody decide not to drink and then they're drinking at 5 o'clock? Well, it's not because you're stupid. It's because you have no power to follow through on that. Now, a lot of people intellectualize that, say, yeah, you know, I have no power. But when you really understand that in your heart, it changes you. It changes you. And then you can't live sober and not take the first drink because you have a spiritual illness. Now we're going to read about that tonight. They don't get to your spiritual illness till page 60. And our spiritual illness is that we're separated from God, and when we run the show, we don't like the way it goes, and then our mind says, get a drink. Anybody have that happen to them? Now, most people, when they want to go drink, they don't say, you know, I've read the big book, and I'm full of anger and fear. I'm self-centered. I've hurt a lot of people. I've made decisions based on self. I'm irritable, restless, and discontent. I can't stand the way I'm living sober. Can I please have a bottle? Anybody do that? No, but that's really what your mind's telling you. And so you have to understand what makes you an alcoholic. And then if you're an alcoholic, you're powerless over alcohol. You have to admit that. You can't say, yeah, I'm powerless over alcohol. You have to admit it to your innermost self. The first step in recovery is not that you admit you're an alcoholic and your life is unmanageable. The first step in recovery is on page 34. It says the first step in recovery is we had to fully concede to our innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. I'll never be like normal people. So I have to understand that, believe it, and I have to feel it in my heart. Now, I can't manage my own life. Does anybody agree with that? So I needed to fire myself. But I didn't know that when I came in here. I wanted to fire them. Did anybody have a list of people who needed to be executed when you came in here? We all had a few. They caused all of our problems. We're going to realize, no, I couldn't manage my own life. Why is there a correlation between managing your life and drinking? Because when you manage your life, you can't, it doesn't go the way you'd like, and you want to change the way you see it, and you drink. You see that? The relation between managing your life and drinking and alcohol. So the problem isn't alcohol, because it's a liquid in a bottle, for God's sakes. The problem is you're managing your life, and when you do that, your mind seeks the ease and comfort of alcohol. If you're a real alcoholic and your mind seeks the ease and comfort of alcohol, you can't say no to it, ever. The only thing that will help you say no to that is God. God will say, Michael, bad idea. Bad idea, Michael. You don't want to do that. And so I never have the power on my own to choose not to drink, but I can choose to find God every day. And God will keep me from drinking. That's why I ask people when they celebrate, how'd you let God do it? Now, we have to believe that no human power can relieve our alcoholism. Do you believe that? Mm-hmm. Meetings are great, but meetings aren't going to relieve your alcoholism. Meetings are great because they'll get you into the book, and then you'll find somebody to work the steps with, and then you'll have a relationship with God. What is the one trigger that all alcoholics have? Being alive. So triggers what help? You can carry a list of your triggers to the liquor store. You see, those things are good information, but they're not going to help you. It's your relationship with God, and you can see the truth about when you're separated from God, and then we work these steps so we have a relationship with God and we have peace. It says God could and would if he were sought. Did everybody believe that? So ask yourself today, what are you doing to seek God? Now it says being convinced, we're at step 3, and we covered pages 60 and 61 last week. It's up on the site, and it starts with that I be required, that I be convinced that any life on self-will can never be successful. Everybody agree with that? Well, what they're going to do is in the next few paragraphs, they show you what it looks like when you play God. It's not pretty. It says you're in conflict with everybody and everything. You're the actor trying to arrange the show, put everything in its place, get everything managed perfectly, so you'll feel good. Did anybody try to do that? Problem is, it never works. And even on the perfect day, when it goes well, you're going to worry it won't stay that way. So then it's never good enough. So we covered pages 60 and 61. It talks about how we have all these characteristics of our personality to get our way. Can you see that? We tried to be virtuous and kind, but we're just trying to get our way. And if that doesn't work, we become mean and egotistical. Anybody relate to that? Mm-hmm. So it says on page 61, what usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. Now, the fourth step is very simple. We're looking at the show of our life, and we see how it didn't come off very well, and we see how self-will caused us to have anger, fear, and have harmed people in our relationships. And then we work back to see what's the root of our trouble. So did anybody come here when their show was going great? Anybody wake up one day and say, my show is going great. I'm managing the show. I'm going to go to AA. No. We came here because the show wasn't going well. And we think life doesn't treat us right. Anybody feel that way? You can feel that way when you're sober 20 years, right? You can still feel that way. You have all these characteristics, but we don't have to drink over it anymore because we understand what's happening to us. And we see our self-centeredness. So it says we decide to exert ourselves more. We become more demanding or gracious. Still, the play doesn't suit him. It never did. Now, the play, I tried to arrange the play before I ever drank. When I was 5 years old, 4 years old, I was trying to figure out what I needed to do so I would feel good enough, so people would love me and I would be good enough. And how would I get approval? I don't know if anybody else had that, but my fear was, that was my basic fear, because I wasn't good enough just being me. And so I tried to manage my whole life so I would have everybody think I was okay. So I made everybody in the world my higher power. And so it never worked well. And I made a lot of decisions based on self so that I would get what I thought I needed to be okay. And it was exhausting. Now, how do I be okay today? Just do God's will. Be of love and tolerance to other people. Serving others, serving God. Love, patience, tolerance, kindness, considerate, compassion. And so it says, admitting I'm at fault, I'm sure other people are to blame. Anybody blame anybody when you came in here? And guess what? You can still blame people today. And that's called resentments. Those are your resentments. You blame other people, but it says he becomes angry. Any angry people in here? Indignant. That means anger of being unfair and self-pitying, which is an obsessive focus on yourself and your woeful and the woes of your life. Alcoholics like self-pity. We love it. We swim in it. And we get back to that. That's our basic thing that we fall back on whenever things don't go our way. We feel sorry for ourselves. So here they give you a lot of information. This is pages 60-61. They have 57 pages on the first two steps. Then they have how it works, and now they're telling us what's wrong with us. So they give you all this information, and they ask this question, what is my basic trouble? Now, so that's, if you're new, you want to know what your basic trouble is, right? Because you need to know what's wrong with you if you're going to treat it. Your basic trouble, it asks a series of questions. Am I not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? So I'm always seeking for me what I think I need. The second question, and this is the one that killed me, I was a victim of the delusion that I could wrest satisfaction, happiness out of the world if I only managed well. I'm going to read that again. I was a victim of the delusion. That means the thoughts that are not based on reality, they're not based on any facts. It's something I created in my mind that I would be happy and satisfied if I only managed the world well. Now, since I had that delusion, I tried to manage the world well to be happy and satisfied. But today I know that that's not the deal. The deal isn't to manage the outside world. The deal today is to manage in here. Manage the way I see things with God, and then it doesn't matter what that is. Does that make sense? We change the way our whole relationship from not trying to manage out there, but trying to connect with God and be the person God created. I gave you the cards. And see whatever happens out there differently. And it says, it's not evident to all the players that these are the things he wants. People could see what we're like. They could see how we are. Do not my actions make everyone wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? So I would take actions and people would retaliate to me, and then I would get angry at them for retaliating to me, but they were just reacting to me. And did anybody produce confusion rather than harmony? Why? We could be nice at 9 and, angry and son of a guns at 10. People don't know how to react to us. And so those were our basic troubles. And so they tell you playing God didn't work. They show you how you play God, and then they ask you 5 questions on your basic trouble. I could see how this is laid out. I've probably gone over this, I don't know, 150 times at the meetings. I've done this meeting for, 12 years, 1,500. But I could see today, convinced self-will can't be successful, what it looks like when you play God, What's your basic trouble? Now, they're going to tell us, the next paragraph, that we're self-centered, egocentric. And then if you turn the page, it says, we're like the outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him. You're robbing houses and you're being put in jail. How unfair. And the alcoholic who's lost all and is locked up. How do you tell the difference between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic in jail? They've been arrested for DUI. And the non-alcoholic says, you know, I shouldn't have had those last few drinks, and I should have let someone else drive. The alcoholic says, I shouldn't have taken the highway.
Right.
You get it? Yeah. Yeah, if I'd only gone down Wanamaker instead of 470. It says, whatever our protestations, now our protestations are bitterness or indignation over being treated unfairly. So they're asking a question. Are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our anger, or our self-pity? And this is probably true for the whole human race, right? Now, there's a difference between non-alcoholics who are self-centered and us. And they're going to show you the difference now. So they've told us what our basic trouble is, and now they're going to tell us what the root of our trouble is. It says, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of my trouble. So you come in here and you think it's alcohol and them. The root of your trouble is you and your self-centeredness. Now what that means is if you're planted, your tree is planted in your soil, the branches are going to look like crap. They're full of anger, fear, and shame and guilt. The bark of the tree is all your character defects, and they're not pretty. So what they're telling is you need to plant your tree in a different soil, God. And then the bark is beautiful, it has all the characteristics of God, and the leaves and everything is beautiful. Now the way AA works in step 10 and 11, especially in step 10, is you're going to replant your tree all day long whenever it's in the wrong soil. And you start to recognize when your tree's in the wrong soil, so you don't even plant it there. You just, before you plant it, you put it in the God soil. So that the root of all my trouble is me. Now, did anybody here think they were in control of their life? Well, that you weren't, because they're going to tell you. You were driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. See, we weren't even in control of our lives. What was driving me was my fear. And my fear and my self-delusion and self-seeking and self-pity, it drove me. So I would wake up in the morning, get in the car, fire it up, and say, okay, fear, self-pity, self-delusion, self-seeking, where are we going to go? And then I would react all day long to it. I was never in control. And that's why when people finally give up, they're exhausted, and there's such a relief when you finally give up. And you say, God, I can't do this anymore. Because it's exhausting running the world. And then when I did that, I stepped on the toes of others, and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt me, seemingly, I wrote to who? Without provocation. So people do things, yeah, to us. People do things to us, and then we'll go, well, what the hell was that all about? And we can't even see, but we invariably, now here's another line that changed my life. I invariably found that at some time in the past, I made decisions based on self, which later placed me in a position to be hurt and to hurt other people. I still look back and I say, gee, why did I do that? 20 years old, why did I do that? Why did I act that way? And I could see I made decisions based on self, which hurt me and put me in a position and hurt people I loved. So now they've told us the root of our troubles and what our basic trouble is. And now they tell us my troubles are basically of my own making. So when you come here, you don't come here for any other reason but that you got yourself here. Now they say that this is the greatest promise in the big book. Why could they say that? Your troubles are your own making. Why is that a great promise? Well, because if it's their fault, I can't change them. But I can change me. I can change the way we react. I can change my personality with God's help. And since I can change my personality, it doesn't matter what they're like. I can change the way I react. Now, my troubles arise out of me. And the alcohol is an extreme example of self-will run riot. Now, you've seen a riot, right? And you've seen riot. We're self-will running riot in our minds. Now, other people have self-will, but they don't have a riot going on. So does anybody notice, like, when your mind gets all worked up, you'll get some little fear and you'll take it all the way till you're going to be homeless and you're dying and you got cancer and you're going to lose your family and all. Alcoholics could do that. They could become a riot in here very quickly. And some people call it the committee. And we're not supposed to, we learn not to listen to the committee anymore. And we learn to let the train go through. You see what I mean? We don't let the train stop in here. Does this make sense? We're self-will run riot. And here's the key line. I usually don't think so. It was always them or bad luck or why didn't it work out this time? But I couldn't see it. Now to me, the spiritual awakening that I had that changed my life was I realized this. It was me. I was the problem. I was the root of my problems. I made decisions based on self. I had a delusion, and I could see my brokenness. And then I had to change. I wanted to change the direction of my life. Been studying the Bible, and I know the big book pretty well. But the Bible talks about repent, which is change your mind. And change away. I need to change my mind away from my self-centered person to become God-centered. And I had to see that. And that was the spiritual beginning of my spiritual awakening. And that begins the path to God, because I don't want to live that way anymore. So they say we must be rid of this selfishness. Now, I looked at it today. It says above everything. Is there anything above everything? No. We must be rid of the selfishness. So I wrote, how much? Do we want to get rid of 90% or 95%? You see, it's like cancer. I was a cancer doctor. So if somebody, I said, well, we're going to treat 90% of your cancer. We'll get rid of 90%. What do you think of that? Well, hello. It's not the deal. We need to be 100% rid of our selfishness. So we're going to have to surrender completely to this decision we're going to make not to run our lives anymore, you see? We want to be rid of it 100%. Now, how do you know when you're not rid of your selfishness 100%? You don't feel good. You're angry, you're afraid, you know, you're harming people, you have shame and guilt, you sent the email, you yelled at someone, you had the argument, you had to get the last word in, you know, the wife says something and you just couldn't keep your mouth shut. I'll tell you, that program has really helped me at home. She hasn't changed at all, but I don't react the way I used to. And she looks better all the time because I react differently. She hasn't changed either, but I don't see it the way. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it says I must be rid of it. Why? It's going to kill me. So how can selfishness kill you? Well, it can kill you spiritually because you're separated from God. You're separated from God, you don't feel well. You're going to be miserable. But it can kill you because you'll drink. So it can kill you physically, and it can kill you spiritually. Now, how do you get rid of selfishness? It says must. You notice the word must? It doesn't say, how do you think about this? It says you must, because they're telling you the truth. God makes it possible. This is a book about God. It's not a book about not drinking. It's a book about finding a power to live, which we call God. And God removes my selfishness when I'm willing to let go of it. See, God can do it. I have to do the work, and then God takes it away. There's no way of getting rid of self without his aid. Anybody tried that? Anybody tried to do better? I'm not going to be an asshole today. I'm going to be nice to everybody. I'm not going to get upset. I'm not going to let them bother me. No matter what happens at work, they're not going to bother me. How'd that work? 10:30. Oh my, they did it again. Can't they do the schedule right? Blah, 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 blah. You know, and I would feel bad, but I just couldn't follow through. I wasn't a bad person. See, I wanted to fire myself, but I didn't know how to do it. See, I knew I was the problem, but how do I fire myself? Well, the way it works is you decide to fire yourself, and then you take these actions so you're no longer managing, and then before you know it, God's running the show. And you feel better. So then you keep doing the actions, and God runs the show, and you feel better. You don't react the way you did. You have some peace. It says, you have no way of getting rid of self without his aid. Now, people have tried a lot of things besides the steps in the book. If that works for you, fine. But this is the steps in the book are defined to deflate your ego at depth, to get rid of your self-centeredness. And then you have to do it all the time because we're naturally self-centered. So steps 10, 11 is how we learn how to live each day and get back on the beam. It says, I had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but they were my convictions. And I wrote, I can't treat my self-centeredness with a self-centered mind. It's just not possible. Some people say the mind that brought you here, you can't get treated with. Remember, my problem is SHIT. Everybody knows what that is. Simply how I think. It was my thinking that killed me. And I believed everything I thought. Anybody do that? So I had to learn to. I love this one speaker. He says, he has this, you know, the person who tells you these things. He would say to this person, what's your source of information? And when I heard that, it changed my life. When I tell myself things, what's the source of information? It's not God. It's my self-centered ego. Some people call it the devil. It says, I can't reduce my self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on my own power. I had to have God's help. Now, God has all power, right? So if God has all power, can he do this? Yes. But he's not going to do it unless I let him. That's what the decision in step 3 is all about. Are you willing to surrender completely all of your life to God? Now, if you're not willing to surrender all of your life to God, whatever you don't surrender is going to cause you problems. How do you know when you haven't surrendered your whole life to God? You're having fear. You're managing some area of your life, and you're worried about it. And we all do that. So we learn, boy, that was stupid. Why am I trying to run that? We give it to God. We lose our fear. He said we had to have God's help. And I'm just going to read the next two lines. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Anybody think that's a good idea? Mm-hmm. Well, we've just gone through why. And then why did I have to quit playing God? It didn't work. Now, here's the subtle thing. I'm not as smart as some people in the room. I realized after a while the reason I had to quit playing God was I'm not God. I know it sounds really crazy, but I lived my whole life playing God. Did anybody else do that? So we do it naturally. We think we're God. We live in this world where we're running the world. And I had to realize that that world is not real. The world I need to live in is the real world with God at the center. It didn't work. So then I make a decision. That's what they're getting you ready to do. You're going to decide, and then this decision will change your life. And then but only if it's followed through with action. But this decision, like Gary's here tonight, he talks about that surrender in the third step. It's really important. It can't be intellectual. It has to be right in here. I said I had to decide that in the drama of life, now where is life a drama? In my head. God's going to be my director. That's it. He's going to be my director now. I'm going to stop here next week. We're going to go through the third step promises, the contract we write with God, and then what the third step prayer is all about. And then the warning. There's a warning label on this big book. I'll give you a hint. It says, before you take the third step, make sure you're ready that you can at last abandon yourself utterly to Him. And that's the key. So we're getting ready to do that. Now, how do you know if you're going to do that? You're doing the rest of the steps. You're working with the sponsor. You're doing your four step. You're going through the 4 through 9. You're living in 10, 11, and 12. Let me ask you a question. Do you have to make that decision every morning? Yes. The big book says, what's the first thing you're supposed to do every morning? It says, you think of yourself. Everybody wake up. You always think of yourself, right? It says, before you do that, stop. And it says, it has a prayer. We ask God, God, can you direct my thinking today, divorcing it from selfish, dishonest, self-seeking motives? And then we start the process of trying to live each day. So I hope this was helpful. I have extra cards if people want more of them. If you haven't been on the site, check it out. Thank you.